Folks, we put on the best podcast we possibly can, but we couldn't do it without your support. If you want to help us out, if you can, tell a friend. If you can do a little more, we do have a Patreon page where you can be a patron of the arts of NPCcast, and you can find us at patreon.com/NPCcast. Just a little bit goes a long way in helping us put on a great show.
Do you want to talk about challenges now?
Sure. You want to segue into it?
I don't know about that.
Segue. It's not seg, it's not segu. We're going to segue into the challenges.
So Delta said, maybe I should run it.
You are now listening to NPCcast, your place for face-to-face games.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to NPCcast, your place for face-to-face games. My name is Chris, and I'm coming to you from sunny Seattle, Washington. And like I do every single week, I brought a couple of NPCs along for the ride with me to my left. He is the man, the myth, the legend. He is NPC Aaron. Aaron, how are you doing?
I'm feeling betrayed.
Why is that?
Can I tell a real quick story?
Sure.
So earlier today, I was carrying my son. And he has this little Batman, like chibi-looking Batman toy, but it has very pointy ears. Mm-hmm. And Batman is my favorite superhero. And I stepped over, like, our baby gate, and my foot went down right on those, like, pointy ears. And it hurt so bad, and I, like, shouted some swear words and scared my kid. And I feel like maybe Green Lantern's my favorite hero now.
He's more spherical, I'll give you that.
Yeah, I mean, he also has a chibi Green Lantern, so he could betray me too.
You're missing like the obvious thing, though. It's like it's not Archer's fault. It's Batman.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying.
He's jealous that Archer has parents.
Oh,
yeah.
I get it.
Wow.
And I get it.
He's trying to even the playing field by taking you out foot first. And on my right, hailing from the frozen tundra of the north. He's NPC Del. Del, how are you doing?
I'm feeling pretty good. Iron Man has not betrayed me.
Iron Man is your favorite hero?
He is my favorite superhero, yes.
Nice. Yeah, you and him are like pretty close because you guys both have similar interests.
It's true.
Mostly being awesome.
It's true.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. First things first, we have a very brief announcement. Myself and NPC Aaron are going to be the hosts of a live event that's going to be streamed via our Twitch channel. Aaron, do you want to tell the people what that event is?
Sure. Down at our local game store, Card Kingdom, they are putting together an event called The Gauntlet, where they have invited local gaming organizations and companies and podcasts to submit teams that will compete in a gauntlet, hence the name, mm-hmm. of tabletop gaming events. The winner gets a trophy, which is also a gauntlet. There's a theme here.
Yeah.
And we're going to cover it. We're going to stream it live on our Twitch channel, mm-hmm. Which is twitch.tv/NPCcast, and we'll probably remind you in future shows. But you can also, these teams are going to be raising money. All the proceeds go to Child's Play. Yeah, that's it, I think.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty awesome. It's May 18th. Some of the teams that have already been assembled, you have a team from Wizards of the Coast, a team from Bungie. I know that you have a team from the Lady Planeswalker Society, which is a group of female magic players. It's going to be a ton of fun, and we're super excited. The games are sort of all over the place, so we're going to try to give our best insights. And when we don't have something smart to say, we're going to say something funny. That's going to be like the modus operandi for the entire broadcast. So join us May 18th for the Gauntlet, a call to engage. Now let's get on to the show's topic. And this is a topic that we actually had skirted around doing last year. I recently was inspired to bring this up again because we know a lot of you listeners play role-playing games. And recently on Twitter, I tweeted out the question, you know, what systems do you guys play the most? And we got some feedback, and a lot of it was sort of the traditional role-playing games. There is some D&D 3.5, some D&D 4E, a lot of D&D in general. And don't get us wrong, we love Dungeons & Dragons, but we talk about a lot of other role-playing games on this podcast, And we are afraid that you don't know how awesome some of these other games are. So what we wanted to do was put together an episode all about one of our favorite RPGs and tell you the reasons why you might want to try it. What RPG is that this go around, Aaron?
I'm sorry, I missed all of that because I was counting this big box of money Evil Hat sent us for this episode. Mm-hmm. So,
wait, you got a big box of money?
Well, Chris and I.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just got a set of dice.
So, look under your chair.
Oh, I got a box of money!
What game are we talking about?
Oh, we were talking about Fate. So now that joke will make sense.
Mm-hmm. I have a question. Fate, I've occasionally seen with periods after the letters. Is it an... No?
No.
But I have seen Fae. So is it an anagram?
Fae is short for Fate Accelerated Edition. Fate used to be spelt with all capital letters, but they recently changed that. And I just read an Evil Hat like style guide, and they announced that, you know, now they're not capitalizing all the letters, so you don't have to do that anymore. So it saves on toner, you know, in the long run, typing it out so much. So yeah, Fate is a system that was it's been around for a while. It actually existed first in the Dresden Files RPG, and since then had a core book released for it, you know, as part of a widely successful Kickstarter. It was our number one release of 2013. So Fate is obviously, we've talked about it a lot on the show, and we wanted to just kind of run down some of the things that we love about the Fate system. Now, as you guys know, if you're listening to the show, you know that we don't review products, and that is mostly because we really like to spend our time telling you about things that we think are awesome, and there's not a lot of room to sort of trash stuff that we don't think. We just sort of don't mention it on the show. Now, this is going to tie in a little bit with what I'm excited about, spoiler alert, because I recently started a Fate campaign for the first time with a new group. The first thing that we want to talk about is the unique way that Fate combines character creation and world building. And Aaron, can you sort of explain that process a little bit to the people who have no clue about Fate, which turns out is a large portion of our audience?
So yeah, it's done in a very kind of collaborative way. You're going to come up with some issues that your world is facing, and those will kind of shape your world. You'll also come up with some general rules before you even do that. And then you'll start filling in locations and giving those locations faces or aspects. And oftentimes it happens that you kind of do this at the same time as you're creating the characters and giving them aspects, which we'll explain aspects in a moment. But basically they're descriptors that have an effect on the game.
Right. And the thing I like about it, it's completely open-ended. We started with a note card, and I actually had a bunch of note cards, and I had on one column, do want, and on the other column, don't want. And I just asked my players, I was like, okay, what types of things do you want to see in a campaign?
Mecha.
Mecha is one possibility. That's actually our other weekly group picked Mecha. That's what they wanted to see. But in my new group, it was like they wanted some semblance of technology, like Da Vinci-esque inventions are real. And so we determined that was Rentech. And we sort of went through this note card of things that we wanted to include. And that started to flesh out the world. And then we started thinking about places in the world, you know, where these sort of technological advancements would happen. And then I was like, you know what? Now we have enough to sort of make characters with. Let's sort of build your characters and kind of go through that whole process. The awesome thing is the way that all the stories sort of connect in Fate. And Del, you recently did this with our normal weekly group because we're going to do a Fate one-shot with Mecha, of course. But can you explain to people kind of how the character backstories intertwine in Fate?
Yeah, you start by writing a little paragraph or just a few sentences about a story that that you experienced or your character experienced. And then either everybody passes to the left or you just kind of hand stuff around. And other characters figure out how their character works into your story. Mm-hmm. So if you were, you know, at a protest, you know, protesting, they can figure out that they were a cop there suppressing that protest and create drama and a built-in conflict to the story right off the bat.
Right, and it's really cool because it combines backstory with actually coming up with elements of your characters, which Fate refers to as aspects. The other thing that's great about it is my friend Anastasia, she was doing her backstory for her character, and she wanted to be sort of the person in town who adventurers take their armor to get cleaned. And one of the other characters comes into her shop and pays with some coins. And on the note card she just wrote, he paid with some coins that were from a forbidden nation, and I had to turn them in to the authorities. Basically, she wanted to create some conflict between their characters right off the bat. And that was awesome because now all of a sudden, just sort of thought into existence is this idea that there's a nation somewhere that still has, coinage that is for some reason off limits to the people in their particular city. So that's a good example of how character creation can also influence the world building as well. And of course, all this sort of storyboarding and story building helps you build aspects. And aspects and fate points are the real keys to keeping fate kind of moving. They're the real core of the game. So can you kind of explain aspects, Aaron, to people who maybe have heard of them or don't really know how they work?
Sure. So an aspect is a short phrase that describes your character, and you'll have a few of them that come from different. You'll have them for different reasons. Some might even be temporary. Some are more permanent. They could be anything from the manners of a goat is one that it suggests in the book. And aspects are double-sided because fate points are kind of the currency of player agency in this game. To use your aspects for when they would matter, you spend a fate point. So, for instance, if I'm in a situation where insulting somebody might be useful, I can invoke Manners of the Goat for a +2 or a reroll. On the other hand, if we're at a banquet with, that's very high society where my Manners of a Goat can hurt me, the GM can reach across the table with a fate point and say, well, this is going to be a very difficult situation for your character since you have the manners of a goat. And then I can either accept the fate point and my manners will, negatively affect me, or if I don't want that to happen, I have to spend one of my own fate points to play against character. So it has this really neat economy of fate points going back and forth, and it works really great as a role-playing tool for your character.
Yeah, my favorite part is, like you said, using good things in a bad way and vice versa. If you're fighting a dragon, the dragon might have an aspect huge, and the DM can use that huge aspect to stomp you, but you can use that same huge aspect against the dragon to slide in between his legs and get behind him.
I think that, why I like aspects so much is that they're more immersive than just numbers. Because, if I'm in a game and I'm like, oh, I have strength 5, I'm like, my character's really strong. But that's not as evocative as, the might of an ox or something like that. That makes me think, oh, he's very strong from, pushing and lifting. And, they're just so much more descriptive and tell you more about your character than simple numbers, which is why my favorite game is Fate, really, is because of aspects.
Right, yeah. One of the aspects that Anastasia had for her character was Mother Always Knew Best. And it was the idea that she wanted to have a character who was good at, making home remedies, good at, fixing things. If you're sick, she can say, oh, I know how to fix that. You just, mix some vinegar, pour it on a carrot, and, stick it up your nose for 12 minutes or whatever. So just
cures cancer.
Yeah, exactly. So sort of just these home remedies. But we also wanted to have an aspect that pointed to the fact that her character was sort of a mama's boy. And so we basically were able to fit those two things together in one aspect in kind of a cool way. So aspects really give you a chance to sort of define your character in more flavorful terms. I know that when I made my recent character for our Fate game that we played recently, I tried to write all the aspects in his voice. So it was only Volgrath can judge us and things like that. sort of to make it seem like he was like really really about those things.
And in the same way, the aspects are really useful for the GM. Not only the ones that are on your bad guys and the scenes that you place, but also, for instance, a lot of times when you're running a role-playing game and you want to keep everyone involved in the story, you have to constantly keep thinking of ways to hook them back in. But their aspects give you these phrases that just make you constantly draw them into the story. They're important. You know, that all of a sudden when their social ineptitude comes into play, oh, now this has created a new situation that pertains directly to them. So I think it's really cool to be able to do that without having to do a lot of work ahead of time thinking up things for these characters.
Right, and it really goes even further because, you know, because it sort of acts as backstory as well, it allows you to look at a character sheet, look at their aspects, and then say, okay, how would this aspect get this person in trouble? How would being a pirate of the Golden Coast be a bad thing? And that turns into a story hook. And so you actually have story hooks that, like you said, are just, you know, inextricably woven into the fabric of the characters because you're basing it off of, you know, their aspects and who they are.
Because of aspects, it's also a great game to kind of break your power gamers out of that a little bit more and draw them in because it is literally impossible to power game Fate. I'm just going to say that because you could say, like, well, I'm just going to write aspects with no downsides. And if your GM let you get away with that, actually be terrible because you would never get fate points because no one would ever compel them.
Yeah, but even, you know, best swordsman in the world
is still just a plus two or a reroll.
Right, and that's also going to be a downside because now you're going to have other swordsmen coming after you trying to take you off, you know?
Yeah, there's just no way to really, like, power game it. You're good at the things you say you're good at. You're bad at the things that you don't have points in. You have plenty of player agency to aid you. There's no way to, like, nobody's going to spend their time thinking up unique stunt skill combos that, like, let them do all this crazy stuff because it's not that kind of game. It does cinematic by nature, and you're not going to, like, abuse any rules by doing that kind of stuff.
Right, and the other thing, too, that it does, and it sort of helps break players out of, you know, the traditional way that they normally think about playing role-playing games, is not only is it impossible to write a character that doesn't have a downside and actually make it work well, but it's a system that actually incentivizes occasionally making poor decisions from a strategic standpoint.
Yeah, you might be more familiar with action points or bennies from other games you've played, and fate points function the same way, except the only way to get them is to invoke your own bad aspects.
Right, and use it basically against you. And if you're a fan of, you know, television dramas where those characters always make the worst decisions at any possible time, fate can really sort of mimic that to an extent. So it's really the way the aspects and fate points work in conjunction with each other, and the way that they're sort of built into character creation and through play is sort of the main crux of why fate is such a compelling, no pun intended, game to play. But let's talk about some of the other sort of rules in Fate, and they're pretty light. There's not like a lot to them, but what is it that you like about, for example, the conflict resolution system in Fate, Aaron?
So for those that don't know, Fate dice, which are fudge dice as they were originally known, are dice. They're six-sided dice. They have two pluses, two blank sides, two minuses. You roll four of them and tally it up, so you're getting somewhere between positive four and negative four. But 63% of your rolls are going to be either minus one, zero, or plus one. They have a really clean bell curve to them, which means that when your character is good at something, the skill that you have is more important than the dice roll, as opposed to, let's say, a d20, which has a huge range of outcomes, and they're all equally probable of coming out on the dice. So, you know, especially if a one is always a failure, no matter how good you are, you have a 5% chance of failing no matter what, which is weird in a lot of situations. It feels weird to me. I love this system. And then you add in that you have fate points to buy rerolls and invoke aspects, and you really feel like when it counts and when you want to spend your resources on it, you get to influence the story and do the thing your character wants to do.
I agree. Yes. And the cool thing is that, coming from another game into Fate and sort of knowing how other RPGs work, knowing how the skill system in D&D works translates perfectly to Fate because it's roll a dice, add your skill, that's it. But in Fate, you have a much flatter curve, so it's like you know sort of how things are going to work out a little bit better. Now, the thing that Fate does is it assumes competence. Like, Fate is very good at games where the heroes are good at things, or at least in the case of my most recent campaign, are going to be very lucky at things. It's not so good for games like anything using the Cthulhu mythos, where your goal is to just survive for as long as you can. I think that the mechanics do a really good job of sort of making you feel heroic and then sort of getting out of the way.
One of my favorite parts about Fate, coming to it from, I've played a lot of Call of Cthulhu and even Gumshoe, is there are a bajillion skills, and Cthulhu and Delta Green and Cthulhu by Gaslight all have hugely different skill lists. But with Fate, you would be able to run an 1890s game, a 1920s game, and a 2000s, modern era game with the same skill list. I have Drive on a character in a Fate game, and that refers to how good he is at riding camels, because that's what Drive is in the world he's in, is camels. So right. He's an expert camel jockey.
Yeah, and I mean, you can always change names and stuff, and they encourage you to do that, which brings me to my point, and kind of the next great thing about Fate, is that while out of the box, it is not necessarily great for a Cthulhu game, Fate is, to me, especially because they put out a whole book on it, really easy to like mod into what you want with minimal work.
Mm-hmm.
It's really easy to create a magic system because there's no magic system by default in the game, but you can add one very easily. You can make a skill for it. It gives you innumerable ways to do it. Just reading the toolkit, you're like filled with ideas. You're like, oh, these are really cool ideas. So it'd be very easy to have a Cthulhu game. You could add a sanity track, and it even talks about that. There's one game where it talks about if wealth is important to your characters, because normally you just roll resources if you need to buy something that might be out of your range.
Mm-hmm.
If wealth would be important to your characters, you can actually add a stress track like you have for your health for wealth. And, maybe all your characters are Wall Street fat cats by day, and somebody attacks your stock portfolio through espionage, and they can roll that like a regular attack in the game, which is really neat. Fate handles all conflict the same way, whether it's physical or mental, which keeps it kind of flowing narratively. But the way you can just add things into the game very easily is probably like one of the most appealing parts to me as a GM, because very rarely am I satisfied fully with a game out of the box. And most games take a lot of work to change them very substantially, but Fate does not.
You said something about there's an entire book on customizing it. So there's the Fate core book, and then what is this other book you're talking about?
It is the Fate System Toolkit.
Mm-hmm. Is that the Fate version of the DMG?
No, there is no real DMG. So there's the Fate Core book, which gives you everything you need to run and play Fate Core. Mm-hmm. And there's also Fate Accelerate, as we said, which is kind of a stripped-down $5 version. And
wait. $5 for an entire RPG?
Yes, but we'll get to that in a moment.
Yeah. Anyway, the Fate System Toolkit it looks the same, except it's purple. They have a really good aesthetic between their books. So it's purple, and it basically has examples for all kinds of, like, modifications to the system to represent things it doesn't do very well out of the box. There are also two books full of worlds where people have made modifications that you can read through and use at your leisure as well.
Right. For example, when I was like, hey guys, I want to run a Fate one-shot. What do you guys want to play? And you guys were like, we want to play with mechs. Okay, so I jumped on Google and I was like, Fate mech rules. And it turns out one of the Fate worlds books, I think it's the Worlds and Shadows.
I believe you are right.
There's two of them, World in Flames and World in Shadows.
Worlds on Fire and Worlds in Shadow.
Yeah. So Worlds in Shadows had a setting called Camelot Trigger. And Camelot Trigger is basically a sci-fi setting. It's Knights of the Round Table, but instead of wearing suits of armor, they're wearing suits of quote-unquote armor, which are basically mech battle suits. So it had a whole system for building and customizing mechs. And so I took that and I used it in our one-shot game. And that's one of the cool things about Fate. Now, recently, I was on D&D Academy, and we had talked briefly about 13th Age, because they were sort of getting into that. And 13th Age is another game that I really enjoy. I like the rules and like the world. And it sort of all works in concert with each other. The problem with 13th Age, and I think we noticed this a little bit when we played it with our normal weekly group, is that you can take pieces of it and use them, but it's not designed to sort of hold up under that. Like, it's not designed to have elements of it stripped away. If you get rid of the icons in 13th Age, the game sort of begins to sort of fall apart and lose some of the thing that makes it really good. But Fate is designed for everything to be able to plug into it. As long as you have the aspects and sort of the basic idea of fate points in there, everything else is up for grabs. For example, the Freeport Companion gets rid of all the skills in Fate and replaces them with strength, dexterity, constitution, intelligence, wisdom, and charisma. And that's it. So it's a great game for people who want to have those a la carte types of things. So it's a really great game for people who know what setting they're trying to create and then are willing to sort of do the work to find the elements and put it all together. If you like building Legos, you'll like playing Fate.
Agreed.
Part of the reason why it works that way is because the game is just affordable. The books are easy to come across. I mean, if you buy the Fate core book, like the Fate System Toolkit is right there. They're both around $20.
And you know, I was blown away the first time I saw it. It's a trade paperback sized, or it's smaller than trade paperback.
It's digest size.
Digest size. What people and call it. It's hardcover.
Mm-hmm.
And yes. It's sturdy. And I was really impressed with how nicely put together the book was.
I actually want, after this, at Fate, one thing that made me realize is I want all RPGs to be digest size now, because when everyone at the table would like to have a copy of the book, it takes up so much less real estate at the table for them to have their little Fate book than it does to have a full size like core rule book for Pathfinder or something.
Mm-hmm.
So now, like, in my mind, every time I see, like, I buy a big book, I'm like, oh, cool, but gosh, I wish this was digest sized instead.
Can we talk about the ape spy?
I don't know
Cyber Gorilla.
I don't know the story about Cyber Gorilla, but he makes an appearance throughout the book. It's just an example of
he's a gorilla in a tuxedo,
right?
Yeah, well, I thought he's in a martial arts gi with a cybernetic arm.
No, I mean he's throughout the book in a variety of different scenarios.
On the cover, I believe he's in like a red martial arts gi with like a robot arm.
He lives a pretty exciting life.
But I just want to play his Fate world. I just want to play that game. Players are all gorillas, cybernetically enhanced.
It would be easy to do. So I mean, it's one of those things that it's so cool to have a game where you can buy all the books for it for like under $100. I mean, I'm speechless, to be honest with you, with how much customizability you have with just those books. Now, I also, since Dell had already brought it up, want to mention the Fate Accelerated Edition a little bit. Now, Fate Accelerated Edition is basically...
They take the T out, that saves on printing.
Right, so they take out the T, they're saving it on ink, and then you end up with a stripped-down version of Fate. But it's also sort of its own game as well. It's not exactly Fate, just stripped down. It has a different sort of vibrancy to it, but it still uses the basic idea of aspects and fate points. It gets rid of skills in exchange for approaches. So instead of saying, I'm going to try to, you know, break into this house, and the person running the game is like, all right, that's a burglary roll. You say, I'm going to break into this house, and then the person running the game is like, okay, that's going to be the sneaky approach. So now roll your sneaky. But it's really cool. And I mean, it's $5. Like, where else can you get an actual complete RPG that you can sit down with your friends and play for $5? It's pretty
usually
phenomenal.
The humble bundles.
Yeah, exactly. If you can buy it for charity.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you have to basically also buy into the fact that you're helping people in need. And who wants that burden? the other thing, and we sort of have skirted around this, but the sort of the elephant in the room is the fact that Fate is also online for free. Pay what you want.
Yes. So if you only need a digital version, you can just do that. I like physical versions, and I also will want to give Evil Hat all my money. So now I have all their money to give back to them. But I'm really excited because it's easy to get people to play because they're like, oh, do I have to buy a book? And you're like, no, just download it.
Right. And there's a really awesome SRD that's out that's super nice. But no, it's a type of thing where it's great for if you're the person who has to run the game and you're trying to pitch this game to your group who's used to playing perhaps Dungeons & Dragons and doesn't want to try something new. Say, look, I bought the book. Go online. Here it is. It's not one of those pay what you want things where it's like you have to actually put in $0. You can download the zip file right there, and then if you want to, you can PayPal them later for it. But it's really cool, and it's really easy to get people involved that way.
I have not run Fate. I've only gotten to play it. But as people who have run Fate, I know one of the challenges with smaller games that don't have a ton of support and published material, putting together monsters or level-appropriate encounters can be very difficult. How is it running Fate as far as having goblins or cyber gorilla ninjas?
Well, Fate doesn't really kind of have level-appropriate things because combat is so cinematic in nature. But putting together monsters is very simple because they range from like the simplest of mooks that maybe have one skill and an aspect to fully statted out characters only being the most important of like adversaries and allies. So it's actually really easy. Of all the games that don't come with a sort of monster manual, it's the one I like literally have never needed one. I've never been like, oh man, I wish this had, bad guy stats because I don't see the need for them.
So if you were making a troll, you would just give it an aspect, regeneration and call it good?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on how much do you want them to hit it once and kill it? Do you want that? You basically just pick a number of health levels on the track you want it to have, and if it has any consequences, pick a couple aspects, pick a couple skills, and call it good most of the time, and then you are good to go.
That sounds really simple and easy. I should run a Fate game.
Even Dell can do it. But you brought up challenges. Do you want to talk about challenges now?
Sure. When I pitched Fate to my players, there was a couple things that I did want to mention to let them know what to expect beforehand. Because, like most games, Fate isn't absolutely perfect. There are things that the system does really well, and I think we've covered most of that. But there's some things that are a little bit more difficult to come to terms with when you're playing Fate, especially if you're coming from, an old school game like a 3 or, a 2.
Osric.
A 1.
Yeah, Osric would be real, real different. Yes, this game is jarringly different from old school games. And I think too often, to be honest, a lot of role players get used to just playing what they used to because they don't want to learn anything new, or they're just comfortable in the system they've played for a long time.
Which is cool.
And this one is different from whatever system that is in all likelihood. So if your players only want to play Dungeons & Dragons or Pathfinder, and you begrudgingly get them to try Fate, some of them are going to see these differences and they're going to feel insurmountable. So you want to really walk them through it, because one of the first things you do is creating aspects, and since they need to be double-edged to be good, it can be hard to wrap your mind around creating them. So you have to really help walk those kind of old-school-minded players through the creation of aspects. I feel like Fate is such a good game and so cinematic, and old school players always talk about really, the old school Renaissance guy talk about wanting, quick, simple, cinematic combat, that once they play, they'll be good. But they're going to be challenging to get through that kind of abstract process of aspect creation.
Right, and that was something that, my advice to people who are running a Fate game would be to be open and honest with what you're trying to do. When we were sitting down, over coffee, making some aspects, I was really blunt. I was like, can you word this a little bit differently? Like we used the worksheet, so they sort of had the idea of what they wanted to convey. And I would just ask them. I was like, well, how could this get you in trouble? Or what else can we use here? How can we change this sentence to make it a little bit more flavorful and make it something that I can maybe use against you in a game? Sometimes when you're writing aspects, they come naturally from whatever part of the story you're telling or what you want to say. But it got to the end where I was like, listen, this is your last aspect, guys. I'm like, what do you want your character to be good at? And let's come up with a way to make that aspect happen. Like, if you want to be, you know, a martial artist, you know, what can we do to make that aspect happen? And so we kind of worked with it, and then it was all, and then we came up with, you know, the poisoned cobra always strikes quickly or something like that. And so it was the idea being that, you know, sort of had a martial art flair to it. It made him good at, you know, at fighting and sort of getting into battle quickly and being, you know, a fast combatant. But it was also something that I could use against him to say, hey, you know, the poison cobra always strikes quickly. So if you can't just sit back here, and I can compel that to do something that's going to, you know, affect him later on. But it's definitely, it takes some work. And I think one of Dell's points that he made, and I think this is a really good point, is that when you're sitting down to Fate, you have to be sort of ready to brainstorm and be in that mindset. Because if you went to a restaurant and they're like, what would you like to eat? And you're like, well, do you have a menu? And they're like, nope, no menu. You tell us what you want. You're going to freeze up. You're not going to know. It's like, I need a menu. Like, it's so much easier to look at something and pick a feat, you know, pick a skill. The aspects are sort of difficult to just come up with out of thin air.
Yeah, and there are player psychographics that will mesh perfectly with Fate. Narrators, butt kickers too, actually, mm-hmm. Generally, because they like to have those really cool descriptions of stuff. And explorers as well. But there are some types of players using Robin's Laws. The observers, obviously, and some of the slayers just can't wrap their heads around creative words. They like numbers on sheets, or they like to just sort of step back in the background. They don't like to generate that story on the fly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a thing you have to be cognizant of in your playgroup, is that there are some players who won't warm up to Fate right away, because it is, as you said, a radical departure from pick numbers, put them on the sheet.
And there are players that will not warm up to Fate ever. Mm-hmm. Because, like, for some people, and I like this to a degree, having mechanical variation between character types or the actions they take is important to them. They want their wizard to feel different and have, like, a little different system to the way they do things than your fighter. But even with all the modding that you do, in general, there are four actions that you take when it's your turn in Fate, and you do them. And maybe a stunt gives you a bonus or lets you do something different with those actions, but the actual mechanical side of the characters does not feel that different when you're doing it. You're rolling four dice and you're adding
a number.
So the players that want that a lot and kind of can't play a game where they don't have that, Fate, you know, may not be that game for them. And we're never going to say that any game is right for everyone to play, because mm-hmm. there are games that just aren't. And so that's not going to work for those people.
Right.
In the same way, we mentioned that, you know, you have a really great bell curve with Fate, and it means that your character being good at something is very important. And recently, I was listening to the Knights of the Night, and they did a review of Numenera, which has a D20 system, and compared it to Fate, which they play Dresden Files a lot on their actual plays. And a lot of the people wrote in and were like, no, I like that flat distribution of the D20. I like that while my character has input, the dice have more input. I prefer it to be more unpredictable, because it helps me surprise me and tell me, like, you know, things I wasn't expecting happen. So it helps me tell stories better for my character. And right. I could see that being a thing, even though I think in general I skew the other way.
Right. And I think that's something that, you know, a lot of people who are really big fans of sort of the old school role-playing games, and they like having that element where it's like, the, you know, the dice are a fickle mistress, and sometimes they're with you, but sometimes you're unlucky and you do miss, you know, eight swings in a row, and this is now the story of that one time that
I missed eight swings in a row.
Yeah, that Vizix couldn't hit a goblin to save his life, literally.
I think that's like, because I'm the type of person that, like it or not, when I miss the goblin eight times in a row, I get frustrated. I my brain isn't good at turning that into a funny moment or a good story, but I've seen players that are still enjoying themselves and are making something fun out of Missy. You know, each miss becomes more spectacular in description than the rest. I'm just not that player, so that's why I think I like it the other way. But I could definitely see that guy being at the table and preferring a more flat distribution.
Right. And the other thing, and this is sort of the other sort of bullet point that I hit my players with when I pitched Fate to them, was I let them know that Fate is a game where, like I said, you play competent heroes. And the advancement, the character advancement in Fate is very, very horizontal, meaning that you're not getting a lot of new powers added to your character, new, you know, tricks in your toolbox, but you're sort of switching out the ones that you have for different ones. So, you know, it's weird for some people to play a role-playing game where they're not getting XP, where there's, like, you know, a lot of times they're not, like, accumulating treasure, and you have these very tangible, you know, benchmarks for success that aren't there. So Fate doesn't really give you that. Now, of course, you can, you know, tack on subsystems that will give you more of that flair, but in general, the game is designed to be, you know, you come out and you're doing what you do. You don't start at first level. You're starting level like 15, and you're already awesome. Here you go. You know, so it's a Fate game will take you from level 15 to 18. It won't take you from 1 to 18.
No.
That being said, we should all talk about our number one reason to play Fate before we get to the what we're excited about portion.
Mine is very simple, and that is that I think one of the things Fate does that we haven't talked about is it has the very best way that you take quote-unquote damage of any RPG ever. You have a stress track similar to in like World of Darkness games, so when you take a hit of that strength, you mark out that box on the track. But what's really neat is that's just essentially fatigue. That goes away at the end of the fight, those stress boxes. And you have both a mental and a physical. But in addition to that, if you would fill up all your stress boxes, you're taken out, which means you're unable to continue the fight. Doesn't necessarily mean you're dead, depending on the stakes of what the conflict is. But you're taken out. So you also have consequences, which are aspects that last. So if you get kicked really hard in the knee, you might have a bum knee aspect that lasts, depending on how serious it is, for the next scene or the rest of the session. And you even can take, if you take a really hard hit, can take an extreme consequence, which is neat because that's where your character, something happens to your character that affects who they are, and you actually replace one of your five core aspects that you had at the beginning of the game with this new aspect. And it stays with your character for an entire story arc before you can change it out, and you can only really change it out through role-playing your character redeeming that negative aspect that they took on.
Sure.
So that to me is better hands down than any, you know, reduce hit points to zero or a simple stress track or, you know, take three wounds. Any of those systems are outshined by Fate system, in my opinion.
Cool. What about you, Doe?
Aspects. Trusty whip and fedora, silver-tongued devil. There's so many sweet, sweet aspects that it's so easy. If you're playing D&D, like, my fighter is 18.00 strength, and that's a number, and it's like, great, that's, you know, the best. But when you have best swordsman in the world on your sheet, that says so much more than 18 dex.
Mm-hmm.
And the outcome is the same. Best swordsman in the world and 18 dex are mechanically the same thing in their respective games. But saying I'm the best swordsman in the world is so much cooler when you're at the table with your friends talking about other games you play than I have 18 dex.
Yeah. Yeah, no, aspects are definitely near the top of my list. I mean, just the way that aspects help you, and just in general, the rules in Fate help you as a player think about what you want to do and then how you're going to accomplish that, as opposed to how can I accomplish what I want to do. You know, you don't have moves, you don't have spells, you don't have, you know, cards that tell you what powers you can use and what interval you can use them. You have your character sheet, and you say, here's what I want to do. you know, you roll your dice and say, wait, I'm also the best swordsman in the world, so boom, here it goes. So I really like the way that Fate does that. To me, though, the thing that I love the most about Fate is the idea that world creation and character creation are one and the same, and that as a person running a game, you can literally show up to the first session not having any idea of what the campaign is going to be, and at the end of that first session, because character creation is play in Fate, at the end of that first session, you have a world and you have adventures and you know what's going on. And in fact, in my most recent Fate game, my new Fate game, I was able to come to the table with a blank slate and we built something really awesome that I will tell you about in a moment. But first, I want to hear from you guys. If you guys are playing Fate or you haven't tried it, or maybe you have a question about the system, let us know. We'll try to answer it. You can reach out to us on social media. My Twitter handle is at NPC Chris. Aaron?
At NPC Aaron.
Del?
I want people to tweet their very favorite aspect at me. And that's at NPC Dell.
All right. If you want to tweet at the whole gang, you can tweet at NPCcast. Of course, we have a Facebook page as well. What is that Facebook URL, Aaron?
Facebook.com/NPCcast.
And if for some reason you write ridiculously long book-sized aspects, first of all, you're doing it wrong. Second of all, you can always send those to thenpccast@gmail.com. So, without further ado, let's get to the what we are excited about portion of the show, and we will do that right now. I will go ahead and start off because I've been hinting at it, and basically not even hinting, just blatantly talking about it the entire episode. But I have recently started a new campaign. It's very exciting for me because although I play with my weekly group, we play Star Wars Edge of the Empire, and we also are going to be playing a one-shot of Fate coming up very soon, technically a two-shot. But anyways, a short campaign of Fate very soon. I'm starting a new weekly group with players that I have never played role-playing games with. That's not true. One of them I have when I was like 13 or 14, but for the most part have not played role-playing games with them before, and it's very exciting for me because I get to see sort of how new players react to the way I GM and see how they play, and just it's just fun. It's fresh again, and we are playing Fate, and like I said, I came to the table with nothing. I had like three or four ideas just in case we ran into the problem that Del mentioned earlier, that they really didn't have any ideas. And I didn't have to use them because what we came up with was more awesome than I could have ever imagined. Now, we started off with a wants and do not want note card. I brought index cards to the game. And the wants we had were Rentech, which is like Renaissance technology. The idea that they're playing unlikely heroes with delusions of grandeur because they wanted to be like the underdogs, you could say. We decided that magic is relatively commonplace, and magic is something that's studied. So we're at a time period where magic and science are like finally becoming sort of intertwined, and it's kind of leading to this new enlightenment about how the world works. The only thing they did not want was gods or the idea of deities in the game. So those are out. I don't know why, what to figure that out in gameplay, but that's kind of what we started with. From there, they took me on a wonderful journey because I got to watch them make their characters. And we have some of the coolest sort of characters that I've ever encountered. We have, and they don't have any names yet, so pardon me, but we have Anastasia is playing a boy who basically grew up around adventurers. He worked at a laundromat where he cleaned adventurers' armor. He repaired their satchels. He, you know, fixed up their weapons, shined them up. He cleaned ball gowns for princesses and that kind of stuff. And he was always sort of seeing these adventurers come in and was, you know, sort of starry-eyed about them. He ends up going to a ball to deliver a dress, and the woman, the princess, spills something on her dress, and he's like, oh no, I know how to fix that. I can get that out, no problem. And he helps her get the spot out. She kisses him on the cheek. Her boyfriend, who's like some like badass adventurer dude, sees that, and he challenges him to a duel, in which case Anastasia's character pantses the swordsman, and then he becomes a laughingstock, and then they go to beat him up, and that's sort of how it started for him. He realizes that maybe heroes aren't the cool people that he thought they were. They're kind of jerks occasionally. Then on the other side, we have my friend Tony. He is playing the eighth in line for a monk. He's playing the eighth child in a monk family who has the aspect magic and me don't mix, because he was never good at it, couldn't take up the family job of being one of these mystical monks, and so he was sort of ostracized, basically left, became a pirate, and realized that was sort of the life that he was about. So he could deal with the martial arts side of stuff, but the magic elements just weren't something that he'd never had a knack for. And we think it's really funny because his character was sort of disowned by his family, or at least forgotten about. And so for a long time, we were calling him Macaulay Culkin, because we imagined that one day his whole family left on some sort of like expedition and just forgot that he was like asleep back at the monastery and never came back. And then we have my friend Andrew, who has one of the coolest characters I've ever heard about in an RPG. He is a goblin. He's a goblin knife juggler, part of a traveling carnival of goblins. Unfortunately, his entire goblin village was slaughtered by a marauding band of adventurers who came and sort of destroyed everything to take their goblin gold. So we imagine him, you know, sitting like at dinner, just like talking about how the day go for goblins, and these adventurers burst in the door, and it's like magic missile, fireball. And all of a sudden, like, what's going on? So he is basically the cliche of like, you know, my village was ravaged by orcs, but his village was ravaged by heroes. So as you can tell, I'm super excited to sort of get started. We have some elements, story elements that we're going to address. And it's just the idea of these three unlikely heroes who are going to eventually somehow make a name for themselves. And it's really cool. But yeah, that's what I'm excited about.
I just want to say that I wanted to you told me about you're going to run this game. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to run Fate. And I was like, ah. Because Fate is on that level of fiasco for me where like I always want to be playing or running it. Mm-hmm. So I literally wanted to play so bad I had a thought for when I was like, well, Archer's won now. Mm-hmm. I could just like leave him with some Cheerios and a bag and a pouch of food and he'd be good, right? For like 4 hours? I literally had that thought for a moment in trying to figure out how I could play in your game. So I'm super jealous now that you've explained it especially.
I'm excited to play it. It's a small group, three players, which is cool. I think for Fate that works. A smaller group actually works a little bit better than larger groups, just because you then get a lot of, you know, me time, which Fate helps you with. But yeah, it's gonna be really fun, and you know, you won't be able to play in it, but you'll be able to read about it because I'll be writing about it. So,
well, I'm gonna audible what I'm excited about, because talking about role playing games, and this episode is about a role playing game. I'm gonna change. I've been at our work. I get a whole day where I get paid to run role-playing games, one session for kids and one session for adults. We've been doing Iron Kingdoms. We're going to do Star Wars, and Dell's going to help out with that. But it's been loads of fun. And this week, I thought I might be in trouble because we had the rest of my schedule changed, and I did not have time to write the adventure ahead of time. So, you know, these are the people that came to play, and they're not all necessarily people I know. So I was like, hey, guys, just so you know, like, I'm kind of winging it. I'm generally, like, when I GM, I wing it a little bit. So I think we'll be okay. But I just want you to know, I'm sorry it won't happen again. And by the end, they were all like, can you always wing it? Like, it was way better when you, like, this week than it was last week. So I'm like, wow, now it's like, I basically get paid to GM the way I want to GM. I get to play different games all the time and try them out. And I've had pretty fun times playing Iron Kingdoms. Next week is our final Iron Kingdoms confrontation.
The finale?
Yeah, it's going to be good. It's going to be a fight on ships with a colossal warjack trying to destroy them. And that's just the background. The players have another goal, but then the Crixians attack the ships that they're on. So
wow, that sounds awesome.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. But yeah, so I'm excited that I can now put professional game master on my resume.
You literally can.
Yeah,
that's something that you do now for a living, at least part of your living.
Yeah, so I'm excited.
All right, well, what about you, Del?
I am excited for Pillbug.
Pillbug.
Pillbug is the latest expansion to Hive.
Oh, yeah.
Hive is a two-player bug placement game.
It's bug chess.
It's closer to Bug Go. Hive has a new piece, the pill bug. It lets them move adjacent bugs to different spots on the hexagonal map the players create. What I was really interested to see is that Hive has three different versions of Hive. There's the plain one, there's Carbon, which has a sweet all black and all white aesthetic, and there's Travel Hive, which uses much smaller pieces. And the Hive Pillbug expansion comes with four marble, I think they're marble, they're rock.
They're Bakelite.
Bakelite, yeah. Four Bakelite tokens, two red and two green Pillbugs each in the regular size and in the travel size. So you have, so you only have to buy one to get both sets of car, both your regular and your travel in the same package. And then there's also a separate Carbon package if you only have the Carbon set to satisfy your Pillbug needs there.
Nice.
It's cool to see Hive is still putting out expansions, still adding bugs to the Hive that you can play with. Pillbug looks super neat to play around with, and I'm excited to play.
The Pillbug actually changes the game, I think, more than the other expansions have, because there's times that you're like planning your way to enclose their queen and you've like got it all set up, and then they Pillbug the queen out of the way. And then she's in a totally different spot and you're like, oh. Because this is the first piece that moves other pieces. So there's lots of times where you're just like, oh, okay, well, that's my whole plan then. So now you have to plan for this contingency. I think it lengthens the game to a more satisfying length overall, and it's a really cool expansion.
Yeah, I mean, I really enjoy Hive. It's one of those, it's a, you know, one of those two-player abstract games that I often go to when there's just two of us and we want to play a game that's pretty quick. And it very much is bug chess or go, whatever you want to call it, in that there's a lot of replayability there. You can just jam games in because, you know, it's always evolving. No two games are ever the same, which is pretty cool. So I guess it's not really like chess or go in that sense. Moving on. Before we get to the sort of end of the show, I do have to also mention a friend of mine did me a solid this week, because if you notice, if you're a follower of us on Facebook, you notice that there hasn't been a lot of War Machine updates from me. A lot of my stuff haven't been showing it. haven't
just Melmac.
No, that means Alf. Haven't been showing off my stuff, and that's because I've been really super busy recently, and I haven't had a lot of time to paint or assemble models or even play games of War Machine. I'm really bummed. However, turns out a friend of mine by the name of Anthony started a business. I used to work with him when I worked for a company called Games Workshop, and he started a business called Sellsword Studios. It's based in Seattle. This is actually going to be mostly useful to the people who live in the greater Seattle area. He's actually set up a business where he will build your models for you and or paint your models for you for a fee. So if you've been wanting to get into miniature games and the assembly and the painting is something that you just didn't want to deal with, he will do those things for you. I personally love painting, so I just was like, hey, I have all this stuff I bought for Convergence. Can you assemble it for me?
Are you going to link this in the show notes? Because I want him to build my models. I don't like gluing them together.
Oh, yeah.
I'm with you guys. I love painting. It's like kind of a zen experience for me. But I hate, like, there's so many models that I have that are sitting in pieces because putting them together is frustrating. I don't care for it one bit.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely going to put the link in the show notes. He came and picked up my models on Sunday, dropped them off today. So we record on Tuesday, so 2 days, and he had all my stuff assembled and primed, ready to go, like, no hassle. So it was really awesome. He is working on ways to deal with people who don't live in the immediate area, but if you are in the greater Seattle area, definitely check it out. It's a really cool service, and he helped me out by helping me get my conversion stuff ready to go. So now I want to play again. There you have it. If you have been listening to the show on iTunes, first of all, thank you so much. You can, of course, subscribe via iTunes. That helps us out. You can also give us a review on iTunes. We try to get better every single time we make an episode, so your reviews and your criticisms help us create a better product. Of course, if you give us a 5-star review, Dell will read it in the voice of your choice. Hasn't had a chance to exercise his vocal chops recently. I saw him. He's just drinking honey tea and lemon water. Basically, he's keeping those vocal cords moist. He's ready to go. He just needs something to say.
Ray Romano.
I don't know what that means. Your Ray Romano? Was that your Ray Romano?
Yeah.
Oh my God! See, he needs more practice, guys, in his voice. So write a review. Help Del get better. Of course, if you're listening on Stitcher Radio like NPC Aaron does, you can help us out as well by pushing the star, the plus, the thumbs up. You can also give reviews on Stitcher. Those all help us out in the Stitcher algorithms, help us get into the ears of more listeners. All right, we done?
I think so.
All right.
This episode has been messy, forceful, and stunning.
Those are Dungeon World.
Oh, never mind.
Qualities.
On that note, you can add 1,000 XP to your character sheets, and we will see you next time. Oh, bye-bye. Dungeon World, Del, really? NPC Cast is written by Chris, Del, and Aaron. You can reach us on Twitter at twitter.com/NPCcast or by email at thenpccast@gmail.com. As always, support your local game store.